For Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel of The Athletic, Brian Burke later in the hour of the Pittsburgh Penguins, get his take on a day that he's always kind of disliked, right? Like Brian's always said, the biggest mistakes happen on July 1st or July 28th this year. That's always been his mantra. See if he still believes in that, what he thinks the league learned from the Vegas expansion through the Seattle expansion and expanded playoffs. We were talking about that yesterday. Pierre LeBrun's been pushing that, peddling that for a while. The idea of expanding from 16 teams to 20 and having a couple of play-in rounds, which is what the NBA is going to continue. You're shaking your head. You're not a fan, Jonas?
What is this, participation, like, award?
Well,
I don't know. Like, don't you dilute it? Haven't we diluted it enough with?
I think 50% of the teams is still a pretty good clip, right? Compared to baseball and the NFL,
yeah.
It's a lot more teams than what they put in. You know, only the NBA, simply because there are less teams, right? It was the league's decision to go to 31 and then 32, but 50% of your teams still make it. I'm with you. That's a large percentage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I
and especially in hockey, where it's like there's more random, I don't know the word, but it's more random.
Well,
I think.
Especially the playoffs, and I actually think that's counterintuitive to the marketing of the game, where I know we love a good story and we love a good underdog, but it, at the expense of the team you've been promoting all year, kind of goes against marketing 101. You know, like a couple of years ago, Columbus knocking out Tampa. We talked about Tampa all year.
Yeah.
No one paid attention to Columbus. They were barely in the playoffs. They sneak in, and then they sweep them. And it's like, what? How is that good?
Yeah.
For the marketability? Like, this is a 62-win team that everyone knows and everyone's been talking about, and they're out. And that's not Columbus's fault. Like, I'm not saying that it's the team that knocks you out's fault, but all you're doing is expanding the opportunity for that. Four more teams that no one's been paying attention to that have largely been irrelevant, middle of the pack, if not below middle of the pack,
yep.
All year. Now they get a chance at what? Going for a cup? Why do they deserve that if they're the 20th best team in the league? So I'm with you. I'm of the belief that if it's not broken, you don't have to fix it. But what I will admit, and I understand that this is likely going to happen, if and when it does happen, you know, we'll watch. And what the NHL does do better than anything else is put on the playoffs. You know, the raising of intensity, the physicality, every other night, the part of the journey, the pursuit of the cup. It is what they do best. So adding two more playoff rounds, you know, I can understand that thought process as well. But I think at the bottom of it, a lot of it is GMs just saying, I want more security. You know, if my team's 20th, now I can say I'm a playoff team.
Oh, boy.
Right? I can go to ownership and say, we made the playoffs. Maybe that's what the Leafs need. The Leafs can win a play-in round. Would that count? Would that be enough for you?
Well, speaking of that, I wanted to ask you, because I didn't hear this part of the show, how did you feel about the Mrazek signing?
I'm fine with it to the point where I like it and I appreciate that it had to happen.
Okay.
Like they needed someone of substance. And yes, Mrazek is not ever going to be up for the Vezina, but they needed a legitimate tandem goalie, someone that if he plays five games in a row, you're not holding your breath five games in a row. So, you know, is it a little bit rich? Yes, but compared to other deals, you know, like what Reimer got, what Brossoit got, he's a little bit higher than that. I think he should be. Freddie Anderson got 4.5. You
know, for 2 years.
For 2 years, yes, but still a higher cap hit. And, you know, Mrazek is a tandem goalie. He's a bottom half of the league starter, but I think they had to address it. You could not be left out of the running in the goaltending scenario. You couldn't sign Craig Anderson today and pretend as if you did your job. They had to get somebody. They had to. It was the top priority, and they did that. So from that standpoint, I'm fine with it.
One thing I don't think has been talked about very much because it just happened is how that will work in Toronto, because the tandem thing in this city gets a little weird, and we've had experience with it only with mediocre teams. But it's going to be something to manage, you know what I mean? Like, it becomes a little bit of a daily thing. Well, who's starting the next game? Why isn't this guy starting?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Sheldon Keefe is the king of, you know, watch the warm-up and you'll find out. He's not alone.
No, he's pretty good at telling.
Is he?
Yeah.
I remember
he's
times
no Randy
down the
Carlisle.
Stretch. Yeah, well, I guess so. Or Peter DeBoer. There's a lot of guys that don't do it.
Stupid.
Yeah, I listen. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter. But that's the whole point. It doesn't really matter. So just announce it. Who's playing that night? You know, is it Mrazek? Is it going to be Campbell? But I think they it was imperative they found someone that you could have some faith in, and they did that. Is it the perfect option? No. Is it going to be different? Yes. But they had to get one of these guys, and Mrazek was the one they got. You don't seem overly confident in that play.
I'm just not sure about their goaltending, honestly.
No, me neither.
And I
don't
think
get me
that's a
wrong.
Really big, that's not a small deal. Like, I just don't know what you're going to get from either guy, and maybe you'll get good. I just don't know. Like, I think we're jumping a little bit too assuming about Jack Campbell, and I'm just not there yet.
No, I'm not there either. And I don't think the Leafs should be. I think that's a dangerous game just to believe he's made it and he's going to play 50 games and be a stud for you.
Yeah.
I think you have to wait and see on that. And I think it's going to come down to it's a puzzle, and they've got to pick the right piece at the right time now. That's going to be tough because there's going to be a five-game stretch where Mrazek's great. You got to play him all five. And then when the wheels are falling off, Jack's got to take over. Maybe he plays four or five in a row. Like, I don't think it's just every other night they go. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting season for sure. The NFL, I think it's football season. I've had this conversation with people, you know, over the last couple of weeks. Once camps are open, it's football season for me. And I feel like our next guest is more than likely going to agree with that. He's been on the show many times before. Check out the Half Forgotten History podcast. Here is Trey Wingo. Trey, you would concur with that, right? It's football season once camps are open?
No, I would not concur.
Come on.
With that. No, it's never not football season.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's always
never,
football
never
season.
Never not football season. See, the year is divided into four parts. There's preseason, regular season, postseason, and player procurement season.
Right.
And we're just bridging from one to the other. So it was a smart-ass way of saying, hell yeah, brother, it's football season.
Good man. Yes, I like that. I think you're right about that. Do you have access to the reworked Aaron Rodgers contract, and can you tell us about the fine print if you do?
Yeah, here's what I can tell you. That press conference the other day reminded me of the final scene of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when Leo DiCaprio just unleashed the flamethrower. And was not caring where the flames went. It was something, man. I mean, you know, 30. You know, he's a very, very soft-spoken, quiet individual, and that was every single word that came out of his mouth had meaning, and was there for a reason, and was there to present a message. And the message was, quit screwing around here, guys. I'm the reason we're winning, and let's make sure that I should be allowed to have a part of the process. Now, the weird part about it is, like, he got Randall Cobb there. There's no question about that. But other than that, like, the team is the team at this point. I think for him, this has been years of frustration that sort of came to a head over the last couple of years with some very curious decisions in his mind, and I think he had just had it.
Yeah, he made that very clear, and I don't know if he's still open to, you know, resolving these issues, and or are we just stalling until next year and he's gone?
I don't think he cares. I think that he's there to – and again, I'm not saying he's right or wrong. I want to be clear about that. I'm just saying what it is. I don't think he cares about whether the relationship with the organization will ever be what it might have been. I mean, like – when he went through, I mean, one of the most telling parts of the entire press conference was when he said, you know, I love playing here. I love Lambeau. I love the fans. I love the org. I love my teammates. You know, he almost said what he didn't want to say and said he loved the organization.
Yeah.
And he stopped saying that. I mean, and if you took nothing else away from that press conference, that little counter alone should have made you realize, wow, he there is some deep-seated animosity here that perhaps we all didn't understand.
Well, how much say do you think a star player, and a star player especially of that caliber, should have on the organization?
Well, there's a couple things here. First of all, a lot of star players in other sports already have that power.
Yeah, LeBron.
It's been slow coming. Yeah, it's been slow. Most NBA players, you know, yeah. It's been slow coming in football. You know, Bill Parcells, when he was the head coach of the Patriots and fell out of favor with the organization, or excuse me, the organization, because he had a line where he was the head coach and they wanted someone else to be the general manager. And his famous line was, they want you to cook the dinner. They should at least allow you to buy some of the ingredients, you know? And I think that's where Aaron is right now. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people, well, you know, the Packers won this, he's there. And, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I think that player empowerment is coming faster and stronger to the NFL than people realize. Aaron got a lot of things that he wanted in this. He got Randall Cobb. Whether it's a good idea or a bad idea to get Randall Cobb, separate issue. He wanted Randall Cobb there. He got him. He wanted the ability to walk away after next season, or this season, rather. And I think that's going to happen. The final year of his contract was voided. I think that there's I would be shocked. I mean, he said, if we win a Super Bowl, who knows? But even if he wins a Super Bowl, I think he's more than ready to try the Tom Brady experience, right? Like, Tom Brady had a lot of success with the New England Patriots, but finally just wanted to do something else and wanted to go somewhere where he felt more appreciated. And look what happened. He was able to convince, Rob Gronkowski to come out of retirement. And I can tell you for a fact, players were lining up to say, hell, I want to go to Tampa Bay and play with Tom Brady. And Rodgers even said that at that press conference. He's like, this is not a vacation spot. This is not a vacation destination. They're coming here for me. And that might hurt him in the eyes of the Packer faithful. It might hurt him in the organization. But I would ask you three words. Spot the lie. I mean, I love Green Bay, and I love going up there for a few days in football season. Not sure I'd want to be there January, February, March, April, and sometimes into May, you know. They are coming for him because they believe he's one of the best to ever do it, and that's the reason they want to go to Green Bay. It's not because of, you know, they want to get in there snow shoveling.
No, I mean, listen, he is the number one marketing chip, and he has been for well over a decade. We're chatting with Trey Wingo, and the one thing I would say separates, though, where the NBA is at from where the NFL is at. Generally speaking, in the NBA, you know, the high-end guys, LeBron, et cetera, are saying, go get that superstar. That's not possible in the NBA. You know, like, would it be great? Go get DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. You can't do that. Yeah. Like, you're not going to do that. And my concern with some of his comments yesterday was, you know, you bring Randall Cobb back. Randall Cobb was awful his final season here. He's saying, you know, you don't move on from guys like Clay Matthews. Clay is a legend in Green Bay. By the end, Clay could not play for this team. So Aaron Rodgers being the friend should not be making the personnel decisions. That's not going to help your team. You're not going to be better with Clay sticking around. I don't think they're better with Randall Cobb today. Is he happier? Great. Are you better? I don't think so. Well, so how do you draw the line there?
Well, here's what I would say about that. And you're right. At some point, and it makes for very difficult decisions and relationships in locker rooms. Clay was absolutely done when the Packers decided to move on and he went to play for the Rams, and you know he wasn't the same. But I think the point was, from Aaron's perspective, is that he felt like it maybe not even that they weren't there, but the way they were treated on the way out the door was just as important. And Randall Cobb, I don't know what version of Randall Cobb they're going to get. I mean, he was really good with Aaron when he was there before, but you're right, he's not that player anymore. I don't think that's a debatable point. But I do feel that there are ways to handle the situation. For example, I'll give you an example, right? And this is all going back to Aaron. You know, after the 2017 season, they fired his quarterback coach, Alex Van Pelt, without even telling him. I was like, well, couldn't you give me a heads up? Because they worked together really, really well for a lot of years. On September 3rd of last year, he gave an extensive interview on Sirius XM Radio and talked about how important his receivers are and the trust that he had for them. And he specifically singled out Jake Kumerow, is a guy I can trust. He's going to be big for us. They cut him the next day. And I think as much as anything, it's not so much re-signing these players or keeping them players long past their expiration date, for lack of a better term. It's about how all of this was handled. You know, and even look, it's not really about Jordan Love, but it kind of is about Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. It's not that Jordan Love was sitting there. That was the case in 2005 when they had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, who they had rated as the highest guy in the draft, was just sitting there. And the old conversation was, we got to take him, right? So they took him. They moved up in 2020 in the first round to get Jordan Love. He wasn't just sitting there. They made a proactive move to get him. And it's a little thing, but it's a really big thing in the grand scheme of things when you talk about what that means. That's not just, well, he fell in our laps. No, we made sure we got him in our laps. And I think it's those kind of things in a cumulative effect that really ticked off Aaron as much as anything. And he used yesterday, Mike Golic Jr. used to say this all the time, when you have the opportunity to stunt, you stunt. He stunted yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, he most certainly did with Trey Wingo. So Zach Wilson has signed his rookie deal, and he'll be in camp with the Jets. He got Lawrence down in Jacksonville. You know, Trey Lance doing his thing. He just signed with the Niners. The young quarterbacks, do you expect at least one of them to have a big, big impact on the upcoming season?
Well, you know, it's so hard to say because, look, I think Trevor Lawrence has by far the entire package, right? But then it becomes, okay, what's around him? And we're talking about Urban Meyer in his first year as a head coach in the NFL. And I'll be honest with you, there's not a lot of great successes from college coaching that have had tremendous records that come to the NFL and blow it away. You know, it's Dick Vermeil, it's Jimmy Johnson, it's Pete Carroll, and Tom Coughlin, really, and a lot of failures. So I believe that Trevor Lawrence is as good as I've seen coming out in a long, long time in terms of every single physical attribute and the right mindset. It does matter where he's playing, who he's playing with, and who he's playing for. The Zach Wilson thing I think is very interesting to me because he had two distinctly different years, his last 2 years at BYU. One was okay and one was spectacular. But the thing that no one talks about with Zach, and by the way, the Jets being the Jets, of course he was the last first-round pick signed. I mean, like, you're trying to get this new era of Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh. We're not the same old Jets. Then why was your guy as the second overall pick the last one to sign? That's a problem already, in my opinion. But Zach was from a tiny town in Utah and went to BYU. New York is not a tiny town in Utah, nor is it BYU. And I'm wondering whether or not the success or failure of Zach Wilson will depend not at all on his football acumen, but his acumen to adapt. Like, it's different, you know? Like, Sam Darnold came from USC in Los Angeles, and he still alluded to it on his way out the door in Carolina on what the expectations are for you as a quarterback in that city. It's different. So, to me, Zach Wilson's success or failure may ride completely on everything away from the football field. And not to say that he's going to do bad things, but can you handle it, right? Can you deal with all of that? Because I guarantee it wasn't that way in, what, Dropo, Utah, and at BYU.
Well, that's 100% true. I mean, that's one thing we do know. What he's going to look like once he finally plays, I guess we'll find out. But New York and Utah, very different parts of the country. We're into camp. The season never stops, as you said, Trey. Enjoy it, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
You got it, guys. Anytime. Appreciate it.
There is Trey Wingo, Half-Forgotten History podcast, and the NFL season right around the corner, the CFL season right around the corner. The NBA offseason is officially here. Are you seeing these rumors? It's not even a rumor, really. It's Shams Charania of The Athletic is reporting that the Lakers and the Wizards are discussing a trade that would send Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to Washington for your boy, Russell Westbrook. Westbrook, LeBron, and AD. Is that a big three? That would probably classify as a big three.
Sort of.
In fact, I know it would. The question is, will it work? Will it work? You know what that kind of feels like to me, and this is my initial thought. Remember at the end of the run,
I think I know what you're talking about. Are you talking the Lakers when they tried to load up and they got Karl Malone and they got Gary Payton and, and it didn't work at all?
It didn't work at all.
It was a disaster.
I go even further down the line when they went and got, remember, Steve Nash and Dwight Howard went
there? That
was
a bigger disaster.
And it was an even bigger disaster. Like, those were – now, like, the one with Payton and Malone, I think they got to the NBA Finals. Wasn't that where they lost to Detroit?
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's where they lost to the Pistons in 04. The Nash and Howard years would have been in, you know, 2011, 2012, and that just, like, never went anywhere. Like, that was
well, because Nash was hurt.
Yeah, Nash
and Dwight was Dwight.
Old and over the hill, and it was a mess.
Wow.
You know, Russ, Westbrook, he gives you it every single night, but, you know, this is Oklahoma City potentially all over again, where he's third in the pecking order here. He wasn't in Oklahoma City, but he was certainly behind Durant. He probably should have been behind Harden or close to it. Is he going to facilitate the ball to LeBron? Anthony Davis, when he's healthy and on, really most of the plays should probably go through him.
Man.
How is this dynamic going to work?
He can't shoot. And they need
Russell
space.
Westbrook can't shoot. You think Ben Simmons is Reggie Miller.
No.
Russell Westbrook can't shoot.
You're a moron.
No.
No?
The difference is Russell thinks he can shoot.
He does think
and
he
cannot.
Can shoot.
Ben just won't shoot.
He shoots for volume.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
He has had some nights where you're like, woo, that's a 38% from the field, but he jacked up a lot of shots. And that's the thing, man. How's that going to work with LeBron? Like, that, make no mistake whose team that is.
Yeah.
It is LeBron's every day of the week. But this means LeBron would be in on this. You know,
yep.
LeBron clearly is would be a part of the conversation and would be pushing for this.
The NBA is awesome. So much fun.
It never stops. Yeah, it never stops. And Russell Westbrook, all he does is get traded now.
He's from
Oklahoma
LA,
City.
I believe.
He is from LA. Went to UCLA. Yeah, absolutely. Like he wanted out of Washington, not shockingly. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Bradley Beal will be next. And Washington will be one of the worst teams in the league. But it sounds as if Westbrook is on his way to the Lakers. So our buddy Jack Armstrong will join us in the next hour. We'll get his take on this and what it means for the West, for the NBA. What does he make of all these Ben Simmons rumors? Would he be cool with Simmons in Toronto? How would he feel about that? And what should the Raptors do it for tonight? It sounds like Cade Cunningham's going one, Jalen Green two, Evan Mobley three.
And then it starts.
Then it starts. Do you take Suggs at four, which is the presumptive fourth pick, right? Like everyone's saying it, and they've been saying it for a long time. Or do you go off the board and take, you know, a Scotty Barnes or a Kuminga or someone else that isn't getting a lot of play at this point? I wouldn't be shocked any which way. I really wouldn't. The way this team operates, the way they scout, the way they think, the way they plan, the way they believe in their development, which they should absolutely believe in their development, they might take a project. Like Suggs feels like he's ready to step into the NBA.
Hayes, like going back to the Leaf conversation, they've earned the benefit of the doubt where whoever they take, you're going to be like, all right, they must know something. They must know what they're doing.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at their three big dogs right now, Siakam, Ananobi, and VanVleet. You know, two of them drafted, developed, one of them signed, developed, but, you know, all of them came up through the system. All of them took some time. All of them had to work on different things and iron out different kinks in the game. And now they are where they are. They're all three committed, you know, members of the organization, signed long-term. Fred and Siakam in particular playing a big role in the championship season a couple of years ago. So, yeah, they have. And we'll see what they do tonight. So we'll keep our eye out for that if this goes through. Russell Westbrook potentially going to the Lakers. They are in quote-unquote serious talks. And according to Shams Charania, Westbrook has become the Lakers' primary focus. Yeah. I mean, that's a big three for sure. Like that's as big of a three as you can get, Russ, LeBron, and Anthony Davis. Will it work? Hopefully it gets to a point where we can find out. Brian Burke is coming up. And we're very familiar with Brian being here in Toronto forever and the Pittsburgh Penguins president of hockey operations. He will join us, get his take on free agency, the expansion draft, the upcoming offseason. There's a lot of things to get into with Brian Burke, so we'll do that next. And it feels like the draft will be completely overshadowed by trades because according to Shams and Woj, the two big NBA insiders right now, the Lakers are near a deal to acquire Washington's Russell Westbrook. Sounds like Kuzma, Harrell, Caldwell Pope, and a 2021 first-round pick would be going the other way. So if you're in Washington, you're Bradley Beal. How do you feel about this? You've added depth. You know, the draft picks are relevant. But what does it mean for the Wizards? Let's be honest, that's going to get about 10% of the chatter. Like if you're on SportsCenter tonight, it'll be a throwaway comment at the end. Oh, quickly, before we let you go, thoughts on the Wizards. It's all about the Lakers. It's all about Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Anthony Davis. It's a big three league. That's what it is. And you got Brooklyn in the East. You got the Lakers in the West.
Man, can you imagine, Hayes, if they met in the final? How awesome that would be!
It would be an NBA dream.
Oh my God!
To have a big three in LA, big three in New York,
and the connections. Like obviously, Russ used to play with Harden and Durant in OKC. Yep. Oh man!
Oh, but let's not forget
I'm excited.
That. Yeah, exactly. Kyrie Irving and LeBron.
Yeah,
meeting
right.
again in the NBA Finals.
Kind of frenemies a little bit.
Absolutely, there's a lot of history there. So, but it feels like a lot of things are moving here because originally Woj was saying that it sounded like maybe the Lakers were moving in on a deal with Buddy Hield from Sacramento, but now obviously that appears to be off the table.
They could still trade for him. They need shooting, and he can shoot.
Yeah, but what else do you have to give away? That's the thing. You trade all your decent depth pieces. Unless you're just, why would Sacramento take like five future first round picks and
Horton
stuff?
Tucker?
Yeah, that's not enough though. Like that's not gonna be enough. But Can you believe that they didn't trade him for Lowry? But what does this mean for Kyle and DeMar, who apparently would like to end up in LA with the Lakers? Or there's been a report that maybe they'd be
not
interested
happening.
In that. I don't see that happening. All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, he is the president of hockey operations down in Pittsburgh. We're very familiar with him up in Toronto, and it's always good to have him on. And here he is again, Brian Burke. How you doing, Brian?
Good, thanks, guys.
We were just talking about the NBA and all the trade action. We've had these conversations before. I know you love a trade, and I remember asking you about the Blue Jays trade years ago when they made a monster deal, and you said you loved that Alex just kept adding pieces to it. Do you still feel the same way? You love blockbuster deals and how good it can be for the league?
Yeah, it was Cliff Fletcher who first taught me that. I made a very small trade when I was a rookie GM, and Cliff said, if you got a one-for-one, ask the guy if you could do a two-for-two. Usually you can line up a second guy. Then ask if there's a three-for-three. He said, if you get to a point where it's four or five players from each team, it's a stop-the-presses trade. And that was the advice I never forgot from Cliff. Cliff gave me lots of other good advice, too. He's a wonderful man, but that's what he said. Make them bigger. If you got a one-on-one, and I taught Dave Nonis that, the same thing. Okay, we got a one-for-one. We got Hayes for Burke.
Yep.
Can we make it bigger? And what would you put in if I put in this guy? And the next thing you know, you got a three-for-three, and you got people's attention.
I like it. It's absolutely 100% true. Speaking of Cliff Fletcher, obviously that Leaf Flames deal, that worked out pretty well. I wonder where Gilmore would have been on that list. Like number three or number four. Can we slide Gilmore in here and make this a 10-player trade? I think that worked out pretty well. But
it's like when we made the deal for Dion Phaneuf, Daryl asked for three players, then asked for a fourth player. And I said, well, we're not doing it unless it's a four for three. And we actually waited overnight to see if we could do it before he changed his mind and put it in Keith Ollie. But it ended up being what it was: Schustrom, Ollie, Phaneuf,
Hagman,
and Hagman went back the other way.
He went the other way with Stajan.
Right. Hagman, Jamal Maris, Matt Stajan,
Wayne Primo. I think was in the day.
No, I think Ian White.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's how many trades you've had over your career, Brian. So trying to remember some of the details.
Remember them.
That's right. So what do you make of free agency yesterday? I mean, your famous words of the past have been that that's when a lot of times the biggest mistakes could happen. And with a flat cap, was it difficult to maneuver yesterday down in Pittsburgh? What do you make of the moves that you guys made and how the league kind of shaked out?
Well, we're really happy. We didn't do much because we didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. We were shopping at Kmart, but we're really happy. We added two guys that we think will improve our team. Brock McGinn and Danton Heinen today, both guys we think will help us. So we're really happy. But, they don't fall in the category of the big blockbuster deal. But we don't have any cap room, and we didn't have any picks in the draft, and we don't have many prospects coming. So we were kind of obliged to take a back seat or sit on the sidelines for this one. But I thought Ron Hextall did a good job. I think a lot of teams got better. I think the big activity, as much as I will tell you right now, you can take any of these deals that are over 5 years, and teams will be regretting them in about 3-4 years, mm-hmm. like they always do. They always age badly. That being said, I think it's good for our league when we have that much activity and that much money changing hands and that many players of note changing hands. I think it dominates the news cycle for us. So I was happy with the way it went. But like you guys said, it's we make more mistakes. And I say we, collective pronoun, I'm involved too. We make more mistakes at the trade deadline and on free agency than the rest of the year combined. So some of these deals will age horribly, but they'll make their teams better for 2, 3, 4 years.
Brian, do you have like a worst or a best free agent story from over the years that you like telling?
You know, I never did much at the trade deadline. I tried to make my deals in advance of the deadline. I did make a couple. I think Brad May was the trade deadline deal in Anaheim, and he was an important player for us. But I always felt it was like the blue light special at Kmart. And young people won't even remember this, but you guys might. They put a product on special. They'd say, blue light special on aisle 10. They'd have a deal on Brillo pads or lawn chairs or whatever. And next thing you know, it's 30 or 40 shopping carts jockeying for position, trying to grab this blue light special. And that's what I felt the trade deadline got like. And I think that, I check every year with the league. They're only awarding one Stanley Cup next year. I check. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see 8 to 10 to 12 teams add pieces at the deadline this coming year in an effort to win the cup or maybe just to make the playoffs or maybe to win a round. But there's only one parade. So a lot of mistakes get made. And again, these contracts age poorly.
We're chatting with Brian Burke. On top of all that, you had Seattle, you know, lurking in the background this year. And the league went through the expansion process a few years ago with Vegas and now went through it again this year. And you would have been a part of that process down in Pittsburgh. What do you think the league or I guess yourself, Ron Hextall, the Pittsburgh Penguins, maybe learned about the Vegas process that you could apply to this one with Seattle?
Well, it was very different. Teams back then when Vegas came in were desperate to make deals to keep certain players. And Las Vegas exploited that brilliantly. And so they were able to get a Theodore or a Marchessault. Get Alex Tuch. Mm-hmm. And so you look at the players they got, and more importantly, the draft picks they assembled. They put together like 10 draft picks. So this time around, everyone said to Seattle, we're not, take whomever you'd like. We're going to submit our list, take whomever you'd like. And so where Ronnie did a good job was using his cap space to leverage a few things out, but they had nowhere near the same advantage that Vegas did because teams got burned last time.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, that is still somewhat of a shock to the system that Vegas was that good and continues to be as good as they are. Like going to a cup final in their inaugural season is just incredible. And we'll see what Seattle makes of it, but that makes 32 teams in the league, and there's been some chatter for a while, the idea that maybe there should be an expanded amount of playoff teams, where it's been 16 for a long time. Back in the 80s, 21 teams in the league, 16 teams got in. Now 50% of teams make the playoffs. Would you entertain the idea of moving that back to maybe 20, maybe the idea of a play-in round like the NBA's been doing?
Well, that's an ownership call. I don't have the right to make that call. I've been very vocal in my past career as a sportscaster and very vocal prior to that working for other teams and said, no, 16 is plenty enough and enough expansion too, by the way. I'm not sure how my ownership group feels about that, so I won't opine on that. I think we have enough teams, and I think we have enough teams in the playoffs. But again, that when you're a GM or a president of hockey operations, you don't get to make that call.
Right. Well, as you said, the owners will figure that out, and if it happens, everyone's still going to enjoy it. You know, even if you're a proponent, like I share your sentiments as well. I think 16 is enough, but more playoffs, I don't think I'd be complaining the night of. We had you on when you got the job, and we're asking you about the idea of, you know, running an operation with a guy like Sid and Gino within the organization. Now that you're into the off season, how calming is it, you know, even though you said you weren't overly active because of the cap scenario, knowing that, you know, come day one of camp, 87, 71 will be in there. What's that headspace like as the president of hockey operations with those two guys on your roster?
Well, add Letang, add Malkin, right. Add Rust, add Gensel. I mean, and Tristan Jarry was taking a lot of heat for his playoffs. He was brilliant for us. And by the way, if you go back and look at Flower's first two playoffs, they weren't great. So for a young goaltender to struggle the first time he goes to the circus is not troubling to me. I thought the kid played great for us. But to go back to your question, We've got three superstars that are on the back nine. They know it. We know it. They're still phenomenal players. Like, they all had good years last year. Sid might have had his best year in 4 years. And Chris Letang had his best year in 3 years for sure. And Malkin was really good for us, but he got hurt a couple of times. So to me, we've got to see what we can do with this group before we give up. So it's really exciting. The cool thing here is you hear all this stuff about Sid, then you get here and you see it's true. He drives practice. He's a leader. He's a very popular player, but our team practices better than any team in the NHL, partly because our coaching staff invests so much time and preparation into it, and partly because Sid drives the bus.
Well, your head coach was recently announced as the head coach of Team USA, if it gets to that point at the Olympics. And obviously you have a long history with Team USA. I would assume he had your vote of confidence and two-time cup winner, but do you look forward to that? I know it's not officially there yet, but if it gets to that point, how big of a boost will that be for the Americans having Mike Sullivan behind the bench?
Well, I think Mike Sullivan should have been one of the three finalists for Coach of the Year. Hmm. And I don't usually whine about awards because all the people who are finalists are deserving. So you're kind of slapping one of them when you say that. But we won a division title with horrific injuries. He did a great job. He should have been a finalist. I'm not saying he should have won it. That would be unfair. But we're not surprised that the U.S. Olympic team asked him to be the coach. He's got international experience. He worked in the World Cup with me a few years back. He's been involved overseas before, so it's a logical thing for a guy who's got that great resume, two Stanley Cup rings, has a great coaching resume, has worked with other great coaches, worked with Tortorella, and worked with other guys. So I think it's a great choice. I was not consulted. I think after we went 0-3 in the World Cup, Brian, I think I'm kind of persona non grata with Team USA.
They're not calling you anymore?
Well, a U.S. team has never gone over in a tournament except that one, so they weren't too happy with us.
Okay. Well, you still have 2010, Berkey. I mean, that worked out pretty well for everyone involved. And,
yep.
You know, the Americans.
That was great.
And listen, the Americans, where they're at right now, you know about the history and you know, the mid-90s, that was, I would say, the pinnacle of, I mean, 1980, clearly, but in the 90s when, you know, the World Cup was on and beat Canada. You had Medano and Roenick and Chelios and so many great Americans. But you look at all of them now, Matthews up here, Eichel, Kane, the Tkachuks. I mean, it's the defense with Jones, Werenski, Carlson, Hellebuck, and Nett. You know, I don't see why they can't win a gold or why they won't certainly compete for. There's so many good young American players.
Yeah, and I think that was the golden era of USA hockey was the 96 World Cup. So you go back to the seminal moments. And Canada's used to winning lots of tournaments. It's not a big deal for them. But for us, we point back to 1980, Miracle on Ice, the Gretzky trade, the 96 World Cup, the Samuelis buying the Ducks, the relocation of the Minnesota North Stars to Dallas, expansion into Phoenix. There's a timeline here. And now the U.S. is producing players from, I think there's a player from 37 states that has played in the NHL now.
Wow.
Might be more. Close to 40, including Montana when Jake Sanderson gets there, and Alaska, who Scotty Gomez a long time ago, but a couple more. Like, it's crazy. And so they've done a great job. USA Hockey's done a tremendous job. But I think the highest percentage of superstars was probably still around 96, and now we're catching up with greater depth, and we're soon we'll have an equal number of superstars.
Yep, it's really an incredible spot that Team USA finds themselves in. And USA Canada, let's hope it gets to that point. It's long overdue for the international hockey. It's always great to catch up with you, Brian, and enjoy the rest of the off season. And I'm sure we'll do it again in the fall.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
You got it. There he is, Brian Burke, the president of hockey operations down in Pittsburgh, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Don't be nervous having your trade-in appraised. Maple Toyota makes it easy, offering the maximum value for your vehicle. Get your no-obligation appraisal today, MapleToyota.com. There he is, your old friend, Brian Burke. You'd be in there with the pressers with him a lot when he was in
Toronto.
Oh,
yeah, man. There were some, like, unbelievable press conferences.
No one better at giving a press conference.
Remember the rats? Remember the John Tavares when he came out and said, we want to trade for John Tavares?
Mm-hmm.
Or trade for the right
for
to pick number
the first
one?
First overall pick, yep.
Like, can you imagine if Kyle Dubas came out like a few weeks ago and said, we want to get the number one pick. We want to take Owen Power.
Powers,
it's like,
our guy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, he was he took the city by storm when he got here, and he's a great interview. And you and I, we've interviewed him a ton of times over the years. But it's always great to have him on, and we'll see. I mean, he's also incredibly candid about his situation in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, like I was thinking, Hayes, like when he said like we don't have any prospects coming. Like,
yeah.
You had Dubas on the other day. Imagine if the response to the question you asked him was like, no, we don't have anything.
We have nothing here. I have to be honest with you, Brian. We are currently looking over game tape of every KHL game, scouring, looking for someone we could sign who's under the age of 30.
Do you know anyone?
Do you know anybody that's looking for anything that might have game tape that we can pretend to like? Because we have nothing.
It's not good, eh?
Actually, how much would you appreciate that answer, though?
Oh, man.
Like, Dubas knew it was coming, man. Because, he listed off, like, forwards, defensemen, goalies. He had everything
right. It's like
everyone. And I give him credit for that because I had been beating that drum for a while. I'm like, they need some kids to step in here. Like, the Leafs need some kids to contribute.
Yeah.
Because, if there's – you need depth. You need players on the cheap, you know. Like, ideally, that would be – like, you're a well-oiled machine, and it's – you know, this is almost impossible to get to that level. But Hyman goes out. Here's this 22-year-old kid you've been grooming.
Well, that's what
Freddie
Tampa
leaves.
Has.
Here's the 23-year-old goalie you've been grooming.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to make $850 or $950 for the next 2 years and take advantage. But – easier said than done, understandably. But, yeah, he's like, no cap space, no picks, no prospects. Okay.
We got to do something, but we don't have any money. Kmart.
We'll see what happens here. All right.
Does Kmart still exist?
I don't think so. Not up here. It might in the States. Kmart's been gone for a long, long time. Like, when in doubt, I ask, does the grappler know Kmart? Like, when in doubt, Al's brother, does he know what a Kmart is? Like, that's my line of demarcation, you know, whether I'm older or younger. And I think the grappler would know about the Kmart.
What about Zellers?
No way, no Zellers.
Okay.
No chance. I think there might be a couple of sneaky Zellers still, though, in Toronto. Like, I feel like there's a couple hanging around. Hanging around. All right, Jack Armstrong still to come. Our buddy Jason Strudwick as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 in on TSN 4. Just heard Sokolov lawyers, Zach Hyman. We had Zach on yesterday. I asked him about that. They have a practice in Edmonton. Can you carry that over? I don't know.
Edmonton branch.
Yeah, maybe they do. I'm not sure. We caught up with Hyman yesterday, and I think he's, you know, it's emotional at this point. This is all he knows is Toronto, outside of going to Michigan for 4 years. This is what he knows. Marlies, Leafs, living in Toronto, GTHL. That's it.
I think Hayes, like, I don't know why I didn't think about this more when he played here, but the contract was just like, I don't know that got enough play, how much of a bargain that was.
Well,
and now to replacing that.
Yeah, I think what the reality of the NHL is, if you've got a low-end contract or a contract in which you exceed it with your production, it doesn't come up.
Yeah, you know, that's really true.
It only comes up if it doesn't match. Or if it's so high where even if you do match it, you're like, yeah, but you're still making that. So you're supposed to match it.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why I think in hindsight, in terms of his legacy staying intact in Toronto, outside of him being here and pursuing a cup, and if they ever won a cup, being a part of that team, we all know what that would mean here. He will never have to worry about that. A contract will never be associated to his name. That will come in Edmonton. Reluctantly, it's just the truth. Like, by years 4, 5, 6, someone in Edmonton's going to say he's not given $5.5 million per.
Yeah.
You know,
what did Burke say? After three or four years?
Yeah, after 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And like, Hyman's going to step in there and be great for them and do exactly what he did here. And he'll do that for at least 3 or 4 years. But there will come a time where Edmonton radio, print, TV will say, Zach Hyman contract. Never happened here in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And now it never will. So he's never got to worry about that, being overpaid, being spoiled, you know?
Yeah, his rep is intact.
His rep is absolutely intact. And you know what he is now? He's the new Leo Komarov. Every Leaf fan is going to be like, they got to get Hyman back. That's what they're missing. You got to bring him back.
Man.
And that's not going to happen now.
He's still kicking around.
Leo is still kicking around. Yep, he's still doing his thing. Winning games, winning playoff rounds down in New York. Hour three coming up, our buddy Jason Strudwick. Speaking of Hyman and the Oilers, we'll ask him about that. How big of a fan is he of this signing and others? and Jack Armstrong to help us tee up the NBA draft tonight. And a bunch of trades are lurking in the NBA. We'll get you an update on that, too. Jay's back in action as well. With Jonas Siegel and Brian Hayes, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.